97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Jesse Smedley, Republican strategist. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we were just talking about some of, it's so funny, we played a clip from a liberal podcast, a video cast, and it was a Democratic strategist talking about how Republican men want to own women, and most Republican, or at least conservative young men, are closeted when it comes to their views on social issues. And I don't know, should we play that clip again? I would love to hear a Republican strategist view of a Democrat strategist. Brad's going to bring this up real quick because this could be pretty fun. Brad, can we play that?
Well, the reason why Republican messaging resonates with men is because men want bad things, right? It's like men want to have sex and like own women, right? Like they want to dominate everybody. And Republicans say, you get to do that. And then Democrats can't say that. So we just lost men. It's over, right? Like, what are you talking about? Like a lot of times it will be men that are liberals who will like agree with that. I'm like, dude, what are you like? What is going on? Like there's a lot of men that don't think that way, obviously. And it's just such a negative view to take on like half of the human race.
Well, I also think it's just so abundantly clear that the people who say these things don't actually spend time talking to young men. You know this because we know each other in real life, but I spend a lot of time on college campuses. And I spend a lot of time with
young men.
I love young men. I love frat guys. And in that, I realized, like, even the ones that identify as conservative are almost always pro-choice. They're almost always pro-gay marriage. You'd be surprised at the number of them who support a Black Lives Matter. And so I feel like people just kind of lump them into this box when the truth is, again, a lot of them are with us on the issues. They're just not part of our coalition because they feel like they're not welcomed in it.
All right. So we'll kind of cut it there. So the Democratic strategists are saying that young conservative men are for abortion, love Black Lives Matter, and can't get enough gay marriage topics and things like that, culturally speaking. So what do you think about strategy?
Wow. That was really a treat to listen to. I'm sorry, guys. Can you hear me okay?
We can,
yes,
yeah.
Okay, great. Sorry, I thought I lost you. That was a treat to listen to. Let me tell you this. Did you hear this week, I'm sure you've talked about it, that the Democrats announced that they're going to spend 20 minutes on a syntax study to study the verbiage that young men use, and they think that is what is ailing them. That's what's going to help change minds. And yes. I hope they spend that money. That will be money well spent for them. To any Democrat strategist listening, go spend $20 million on that. I will enjoy my time continuing to win elections. Because here's the thing. It is the Democrat policies that are the problem. It's the messengers and the message that are the problem. They need to clean the slate. I don't know who they replace their people with, but it's not Tim Walz. It's not AOC. It's certainly not Kamala Harris. And every time Joe Biden gets rolled out, that's a problem for them too. But let me tell you, there was also somebody yesterday, I can't keep up, who was saying that Republican women, that's making the same argument, that Republican women are the ones that are closeted liberals. As a Republican woman, I have never felt that Republicans were going to take away my right to vote. I believe it was Kyra Sedgwick who was saying this, the Hollywood actress. Take away my right to vote, take away any of my rights. But here's what I do know for sure. Men and women, especially millennial Gen Z, that at our core, we want to have a good job that pays the bills and allows us to live a life comfortably. We do want to get married, have children, and to be able to raise those children in safe communities. All the same things that were the image of the American dream for our parents and grandparents, that hasn't changed. What has changed is our ability to achieve those things because it's too expensive to get a house, to pay for groceries, to put gas in your car. Those were the things that we voted for change last fall. It's too expensive to raise kids. And oh, by the way, the left is telling us that you can just put all of that off, that that's not going to make you happy. And as a mom to two young kids, I can tell you I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. I'm the most tired I've ever been, but I'm the happiest I've ever been. One of the most fulfilling things you can do is to aspire to have a family and to have children if that's what you choose. But my point being that every time that they say that, try and put us in a box and say that it's about social issues or it's about the syntax and the way you talk, and they do a TikTok dance and they put four-letter words into tweets, it's just them missing the mark. The reason the left has lost the plot, the reason the left is losing the young person's vote, is because they have gotten so far removed from the basics, which is to allow people or to empower people by not over policy, over regulating, over taxing, empower people to be able to work hard and achieve their American dream and take great pride in that. And that just, that message does not exist in today's Democrat Party. But Donald Trump really championed that idea for people. And that's why you saw people giving him a chance and giving Republicans a chance.
I know. Wasn't it great, all the leading up to this last election, all the things that Kamala Harris and I think about the peak of publicity for the Democrat Party, which was, we need to get Michigan's governor to get down on her knees so we can give her communion and insult all the Catholics. All right. Real quick, I want to make sure we get to talk about this, too. The big, beautiful bill that's out there. There's a lot of takes on this, and Republicans are thinking to themselves right now, why do we need to add more trillions on? And there's been a lot of compromise too, trying to figure out the way to get something like this passed. What are your takes on it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, first of all, I worked on Capitol Hill for 10 years, most of those years in the minority, where either Republicans didn't have control of Congress, or it was when Barack Obama was in the White House. It's a really sad place to be when you're in the minority. So when you win and you have the opportunity to actually get some of your policies enacted into law, you need to take that bull by the horns and do it. And unfortunately, what we saw is when Democrats were in the majority, they did that and they put us trillions of dollars in debt. Republicans played their part too. But what we saw, particularly during the Obama administration these last 4 years, is $6 trillion in green new scams disguised as an infrastructure bill. They did that. And we reaped the consequences of that with our gas prices, grocery bills, and generally feeling like our lives were being robbed from us. And so Republicans are trying to undo so much of that. And of course, President Trump has done a lot with his executive orders, but we need those to be permanent changes. And in this big, beautiful bill, to be clear, it's not the budget. The budget is when you have more maneuverability to get so much of this stuff really codified into law. But the big, beautiful bill is a good start. But you have to acknowledge the reality that they couldn't do too much because you'd need 60 votes in the Senate if you got too far astray on it. So this is what they were able to do within the context of this legislation. But one thing they also did, in addition to, we can talk about the specifics of it, of making permanent the Trump tax cuts and no taxes on tips, those things that are good promises made and promises kept. But do y'all remember when we had Republican speakers of the House who used to say, all right, fine, if I can't get the votes from Republicans, I'm going to go to Nancy Pelosi and I'm going to give her some concessions and get her to get me Democrat votes. Mm. And that really made for terrible bills. Mm. Speaker Johnson, with President Trump as the closer, did not have to do that this time. They went in and they said, we know this isn't perfect. We're going to keep working at it. We know they're going to introduce more legislation. We know the appropriations process is going to be a place where a lot of this is going to get worked out for some of these promises that we really want codified into law. But it is a good thing that Republicans held together. That's not something we've been really good at doing in the past. And by the way, what I will say, I would love to be a Puritan. I would love to have a clean bill that reduces the deficit, that doesn't have any extras in it, that none of us like, all of that. But what I would love more is these people that are holdouts for sport and they love to cheer and go find a microphone about it, but then they're not willing to get their hands dirty and do the work. We need more of that and less of the people that just want to decry progress. So I know that's coming from a place of someone who worked a lot of long nights on Capitol Hill with great frustration, but I applaud that there's progress. And if we have the majority, yes, we got to be doing more, but this is, if you believe it or not, this is progress. This is stuff in the right direction. And there's no illusions that it's perfect, but we're just getting started. And this is why it's important to get even more Republicans elected if we really want to see change affected. It takes a long time to turn around the Titanic.
Cassie, this is Brad. I wanted to ask you a real quick question here about like the way things are defined as deficit spending and how if you cut taxes and how that math works out on Capitol Hill, how that counts as deficit. Can you explain that or clear that up?
Well, it's clear as mud, isn't it? It's you know, they say girl math. It's like Washington math. $1 in gets $2 out, right? But
right.
So I truly cannot, in a clearly concise way, but what I can tell you is that there's trying with pay-fors, right, to pay for something. And a lot of times what they use is they say, well, this thing that's going to take effect over the course of 2 years, but we're going to pay for it over the course of 10 years. So therefore, it's not going to add to the deficit, or it's going to net out after 2 years. So that's how you get into this deficit term, I guess you can say. But the other piece that you have to play with here in terms of the spending is, of course, mandatory and discretionary. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece. I'm sure you guys have seen the clip, the previewing of Elon doing his CBS interview for this weekend, where he was upset about a lot of the DOGE cuts not being included. Well, as Stephen Miller outlined in a recent, Truth Social or mm-hmm. tweet or whatever they're calling it today, that so much of that is because this bill could not that DOGE is so much of the discretionary spending. This bill is dealing with mandatory spending, and that's really, really hard to cut. So they had to get creative and figure out other ways without interrupting the rules of the Senate, which would then push this bill to a 60-vote threshold. So add that on top of it. Yes. So they were really threading a needle into a very small hole here. But again, the appropriations process, I know the Senate's going to get the big, beautiful bill now, and we're going to hear about it for the next 4 weeks or so. But where we really want to say, go do your job, is the appropriations process. That's where you can really get in and affect some change. And Congress has not done a proper appropriations process in more than a decade. They just keep rolling. Remember the omnibus bills, the continuing resolutions, the Christmas trees at the end of the year? That's because they're not able to get the appropriations all done throughout the year. So that's really where they should be, putting their heads down and pen to paper and getting to work. And I hope they're able to do that.
Wow. So Cassie, you're VP of Communications at COIN. If people wanted to look you up, where can they go?
Yeah, well, I hope you guys will go to COIN, COIGN.com. Check us out. Get on the wait list for our credit card. It's a values-aligned spending movement. Make your money match your values. Don't let your money go to these big woke credit card corporations that are doing things with it that you don't agree with and that detract from you achieving your American dream. Right now we're on a wait list, but we want you to join it and find out all the latest and greatest that's happening there, and then we'll let you know as soon as you're able to apply.
Great. Cassie Smedley, and your Republican strategist, VP of Communications at COIN, COIGN, at CMS, or CM Smedley probably would be the better way to put it there, on social media. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Great to be with you guys. And as a fellow Kansas Cityan, so fellow Missourian, it's always fun to feel like I'm just talking with friends and neighbors.
That's what it is, just on the other side of the state, but still, Missouri's Missouri.
Right.
Cassie, thank you so much.
That's right. Thank you. Bye.